In order to learn what's going on, because what we read in the paper cannot be trusted necessarily, we called a local pastor. And when we called him, he began to weep because he said, we don't know what to do. We are overwhelmed. We don't have a way to respond to the death. And we don't have a way to respond at this point to all the displaced people who are just streaming, who are arriving by the boatload into our town. Help. This a cry of desperation, and very evident through his weeping.
Now, this when was this exactly? Saturday?
Sunday? This phone call took place on Monday.
Oh, Monday. Okay.
On Monday. This, because it came out in the paper on Saturday and Sunday here. Mm-hmm. Mostly, that was when the reports of the reports came out.
Yeah.
So we went, and the first thing we did was meet with the pastor association there, and they are just eager to learn how to respond. And so what we did was talked with them and created four commissions and ways of responding to the displaced situation. One of the commissions was for food, one was for housing and for clothing, one was for health, for medicine and health care, one was for accompaniment, recognizing the incredible trauma people have lived through. And two, that about up to 50% of the people who are arriving are children who are being shaped by these experiences. And in the city of Quibdó, there's very little infrastructure, and there's no recreation. So this place, children come and they sit on the street after having lived through horrendous violence and are very fearful. Just their eyes are filled with fear and questions and desperation, and they sit on the street. And so thinking of ways of accompanying children as well. So that was the work that we did with the church there, first of all. In the afternoon, then, we met with the Red de Mujeres, which is a network, a women's group that sort of serves as the umbrella for 74 organizations that operate in Chocó. This is an Afro-Colombian women's organization. And so through them, we visited displaced people, and we learned more about what actually had happened in the region. One of the places we went to was called Asia, which is the name of an organization that tries to receive the displaced people. Now, they do receive them. The reason I use the word try is because there's no way that they could have handled. When we were there, in 2 days, 300 displaced people had arrived from north.
Yeah.
They're in a two-story house with three bathrooms. There is not enough food. There's not enough staff. When we were there, Quibdó is very hot, very humid. It's right by a river. When we walked into this dark building, because there's no electricity, people were just sitting around. And when people don't bathe, they smell. I mean, this is human nature. And so there's not food. There was just this a real heaviness in the air, and just a desperation, and just a sadness. It would be important to say at this point that these people that are arriving are not from the place where the violence is occurring. They are from villages that are between Bellavista, or the area of the violence, and Quibdó. The armed groups are not allowing anyone in or out of the conflict zone right now. But people are fleeing nevertheless out of fear.
What kind of an area are we talking about? Can you try and draw us up and give us an image, give us a picture of what area we're talking about exactly along the Atrato River?
Yes, it's the river is the only means of transportation. There are no roads, and so this is a rural area, entirely rural. The city itself is the city. Quibdó is the capital city, and the infrastructure there is minimal. Government presence basically non-existent until very recently, but I can get to that in a minute. This is an area that's abandoned by the state historically. It's Afro-Colombian, predominantly Afro-Colombian, with indigenous presence as well, and some mestizo, some mixed blood, but predominantly Afro-Colombian, if I said anything African-American before. Africans who visit are a bit even overwhelmed, just, you know, I feel like I'm at home again. Mm-hmm. There's a very different culture, very poor, very poor. So Quibdó then is the city, and then north, to get anywhere, you go by river. And you go downriver in order to get to the place, to Bellavista, where this violence is occurring. So the only way for people to get out of the violence of this conflict zone is by river, mm-hmm. and so the armed groups can very effectively block that. And also, it's very easy to be identified if you're in a river, because of course there's no trees for shelter, as there would be around. Mm-hmm. So the people who are arriving then are from the towns between. Now, we were just there for a day and a half. So we were there all day Tuesday and part of Wednesday. On Thursday, we called midday. And that day alone, by 12 o'clock, 600 people had arrived in that morning. We called one of the women, a woman that we worked with there, from again this Red de Mujeres. Her name is, I'm not going to say her name because I don't have permission, but a woman we worked with there. When we called, she too just began to weep. She's like, we don't know what to do. I mean, this is just a humanitarian crisis of astronomical proportions, and there is no one knows how to deal with it. The training doesn't exist, but the infrastructure is not there. Now, it's starting to be established, and there are the Red Cross is there, the Pastoral Social is there, the Protestant churches are beginning to get involved, and so there's potential. It's not that there's nothing. But it's in what exists is does not have the capacity to receive and to manage the level of crisis that's taking place. For example, there's some food, but there's no soap, there's no towels, there's no mattresses. There's rice, but there's no fresh vegetables. So again, I'm jumping around, but I realize that. But getting back to the blockade, people not letting people in or out. So no one can go in to get help people out. People can't leave the zone. There's also no food is not allowed in and out. And so another woman I talked to has a sister who's pregnant, but she can't get food. They're only allowed in the zone with 50,000 pesos worth of goods, because they say that. The paramilitary say that if you take more, you're obviously supporting the guerrilla. But the guerrilla also are not letting anyone out, and the army now is also not letting anyone out. A week before the massacre took place, the civil society, various agencies, put out, there was alerta tempranas. They had said, the paramilitary are here. This is a problem. The government did not respond until 4 days after, approximately 4 days afterwards. This raises questions in our minds. So what happened then appears to be the following. Is this an area that's, for the past years, has been dominated, controlled by the guerrilla? In about the past month, the paramilitary had become more present. They were in Quibdó. And then they went out further into the countryside. This was the situation that's become now getting out in the medios is that the FARC, you know, bombed a church. But what happened is just a typical example of civil society being caught in the middle of combat. What happened was that the FARC and the paramilitary were fighting. This is a war. They were fighting. They were in combat. The civil society, the people in a village, had hid in two places, in a church and in the school. The paramilitary went, and they were hiding, basically using people as a shield. They were hiding behind the walls of the church and shooting at the guerrilla. The FARC, in response, were bombing. And so they launched a bomb, and it landed on the church. 70 people were killed at that time. There were 108 that were killed in the bombing of the church. One died since then from wounds, at least. That's as far as we know.
How many people are actually arriving in Quibdó that are actually wounded and need serious medical care? Is that a big proportion of people?
That's a real problem, because, again, they're not allowed out. People that are wounded can't get out. And so that's why you have people who... it's just awful to talk about. So you have these grave wounds that are turning into gangrene, and these are just from select phone conversations. And you have people who we have talked to, one priest who was there, and people are walking around, you know, with holes in their heads, with their arms blown off, because there's no medical attention there, and they can't leave because of the armed groups. So no, people who are wounded are not arriving. But there's a population of 22,000 people in this small zone, and so people in Quibdó are recognizing that they need to be prepared to receive thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands more when the armed groups allow people to leave the zone. So, I mean, we're not there, we can't, but that's the information that we're receiving. So, yes, they're wounded. Yes, they're... And another problem is that the casualties are just being piled up, mm-hmm. and with the water and with the heat and with the humidity, they're just decaying. And so we talked about now, because also... Well, I need to add this in, even though it's a bit, it's not lineal, just to talk about the casualties. But the army now is bombing indiscriminately. And for example, they killed 10 civilians. So this increment adds, so this how you have about 119 civilian deaths. You also have about approximately, from our context there, 400 paramilitary casualties. They say all the paramilitaries were killed that were there, and maybe 300 guerrillas that were killed. Those are probably conservative estimates. So you could have as many as...
Who says that exactly?
Those are our contacts there who have family who live in the area in Bella Vista. Those are their estimates, because they have, these people are living in Quibdó, but they have family who live there, and that's what they say. So you have up to 1,000 bodies laying around. They can't bury them, and so they're decaying rapidly. I mean, they talk about heaps of people and the worms, and just I mean, it's grotesque and it's humane to even talk about it. It feels like you're not respecting the sacred, but this is the reality of the situation. And so these bodies then too, especially with the combat, not so much with the civilians, with the combatants then, are on the mountainsides, and they're contaminating the water because they're putrefying, because we're humans and we do that. So this is another large, this is a huge health concern. The sanitary issues are of grave concern.